And did you feel like it was when it was time to go? Did you feel like it was time to go as well, or was that like a big joint kind of decision with Dave, or was BMP's offer tempting, or what was that?
Yeah, BMP. No, I think that one was completely down to Dave, really. I can't remember why he wanted to leave. I was just so easygoing. I thought, yeah. I mean, I would say no if it was a bad place, obviously, but it was another good place. So, yeah, why not? I think I said earlier on, I'm not that ambitious. I'm ambitious to do great work and what have you, but as far as career moves and everything go, I wasn't really that ambitious. So Legas Delaney was really good, and BMP was really good as well. So if he wanted to go there, okay, didn't take much persuading. It did seem a bit daft because we were getting so much good stuff out of there, out of Legas Delaney. But yeah, I mean, BMP, it wasn't like it was a bad agency. There were great teams there, like Rich and Andy and Jeremy Cragan and what have you. Loads of good teams, loads of good clients. Yeah, so I think that was him wanting to go there more than me. But yeah, I was up for it, and we went there, and it was very different from Legas Delaney. It was more rounded. There was great TV, great posters, great print, great radio, great everything. And like I say, great teams. Whereas Legas Delaney had quite a, it had its particular reputation, as a press place, as a wordy place, which fitted me more. But now BMP was still good. They still did print and posters, and there's enough work going around for us to do our thing there.
And
So off we went there. But there were more meetings there. That was what I, yeah. That was the thing I didn't really like about BMP.
yeah, Dave mentioned that you would make yourself scarce when the meeting people turned up. But also, I don't know if you remember giving me and Paul a crit at that time, but we met you at 8:30 in the morning, and you said it was because you got peace and quiet at that time of day.
Yeah, that was the only time before account people came in, started ruining everything for you. That was the nicest time of the day. And you get most of your work done in the mornings, to be honest, before all the meetings started. But yeah, they were quite big on meetings there, and I just couldn't stand it because I thought the longer you were in a meeting, the less time you were spending doing the really nice bit, which was writing and thinking and what have you. So yeah, often there'd be a meeting, and Dave loved a meeting, to be honest. He loved talking and listening to other people talk and then telling them why they're wrong. And that was oh God, I couldn't bear it. I just wanted to be in a room writing. So I remember I used to disrupt meetings there when we were in them together. There was one quite important meeting. I'm sure it was a pre-production meeting, and there was about 12 people in there, and the client was there and everything. And I was sitting next to Dave, and I just slid my bit of water down like a naughty kid. I don't know why I did it to this day, but I just slid my little glass of water off the table and just gently poured it on his lap. So it's all over his trousers. And it was too important a meeting for him to get up and say, What are you doing, you pig? We've put, we just had to carry on. This was while he was talking as well, I think. So he's sitting there with his wet trousers, with my water on him. And yeah, I just couldn't stand meetings. There was one other meeting as well, which was a proper highbrow client. I think it was Bentley. And the account man had drawn up this agenda, and where the photographer was there, he was going to talk for about 15 minutes about the style of photography. Then Dave would talk for 15 minutes about the art direction, and then another 15 minutes on the bloody typeface. And I'm thinking, God, do we have to have this much time talking about the thing? And then it came to, I noticed on the agenda there was a 15-minute bit for me to talk about the copy, not even the headlines, which were just there and they spoke for themselves, to talk about the copy. 15 minutes, and there was one line of copy on the Bentley ad, and it wasn't that special. It was just a straight bit at the end, really. you know, which was just slightly elegant and had a nice tone. I had no idea what to say about it. So I think I said something like, well, here's the copy, I'll just show it you. And I just stood up and handed the A4 sheet of paper with the copy on it over to the client at the other end of this round table. And I couldn't quite reach him because it was a big round table. And I just sort of let it go and it just wafted down in front of him. And it was just the least professional bit of meeting etiquette you could imagine. And I just couldn't stand meetings. But I think that's why I like writing so much, to be honest, because I just don't make much sense when I talk. So writing's just a great way of being in control. I can control what I say. I think it's my way of saying, see, I'm not completely thick. I do have a brain. I can do this. It makes up for... It's a great job for someone who's a little bit simple, really, who isn't that good at thinking on his feet. You know, you can control what you do and you can just get to an intelligent kind of statement. You know, one that a place where you couldn't get to verbally. Not for me, anyway. Yeah.
And the work at Legas, the work at BNP, if I was looking at it as a whole compared to Legas, it was a bit more visual, a bit less copy. Did you feel that was like a deliberate change? Did that, as a writer, did that kind of sit better with you or not as good? Or how was that?
Well, yeah, there was a tiny bit less of that writerly showing off business that you had at Legas Delaney. There were some things we worked on where you could have fun with the words. We did about 3 or 4 different VW campaigns, and I think a couple of those were sort of word-led, you know, clever headlines and what have you. It sounds so simplistic when you put it like that, but there's no way around it. And Sony... I think you spoke with Dave about they were a bit of both. They were sort of nice headlines and interesting visuals as well. But yeah, there are others which were just, it was more, as I said before, it was more rounded at BNP. Just lots of different styles. There was sort of a rule book at Legas and there wasn't a BNP. It was just do something really good. So there's lots of, we got more different kinds of, campaigns out there, and American Airlines was one of my favourites there.
Yeah,
and that was, I do remember that being our record for, you know, cracking a brief in no time. I think we did it within about a minute of the account team leaving, which was for American Airlines, and that was just so simple, really. They were, did Dave talk about this? It was American Airlines, and it was the fact that they are not just, oh, it's something to do with JFK and they land at a new place. We got a new, there's a new direction to enter New York from, something like that. And because there's this new direction and it was New York, it's not a massive leap from to get to the line New York from a new angle. And you just think, oh, that's not, what's that? That's not really a headline, is it? It's not an end line. It's just, this should be the line on some interesting visual kind of look. It just lends itself so well. New York from a new angle. So very simply, you just show different kinds of shots of New York that people haven't seen before, that aren't the cliched shots. So it's just a great brief for a photographer.
Mm.
And we did that within about a minute or something like that. It was insane.
And in speaking to Dave about that time, for him, there was a bit of a change when Tony left and Larry arrived and all this kind of stuff. And did you feel like working into Tony was, I mean, obviously it's hugely different to Tim. How was that for you?
Yeah, that was strange because I did quite like being, because I was inexperienced, really, even though I'd been to like loads of agencies, I still felt like I needed some kind of guidance. So at Legas Delaney, it was good having Tim there with his 90% no's, 10% yeses. That felt like some kind of guidance. There wasn't really much guidance from Tony Cox at BNP, but that was his strength. He just hired good teams that he trusted, and they could just get on with it. But you're sort of left more to your own devices, really, and you stand and fall by your last ad. So you make more mistakes, I think, in a place like that. But I suppose it could be argued you get to a better place when you do have to. You know, you've only got yourself to rely on. I've forgotten. I lose track quite a lot, by the way, when I'm talking.
That's fine.
I just know we're at BNP at the moment. I can't remember what else.
We're at BNP, but I was going to, I mean, now actually we're going to start overtaking Dave's career chat thing and head off to AMV. I guess this is the first point that happened. What did you feel AMV was like to, you know, working in that department of, it was a pretty star-studded place, but I guess it must have been different to BNP.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little more like going back to Lagos Delaney, to be honest, because they had more of a press writing reputation. That was Tony Cox who called us from AMV. He just left to go over there. He's the one who hired us at BNP, then he'd moved to AMV. Yeah, so we went over there, and that's where we met Peter Souter, who I went on to work with at TBWA years later and still work with today, on and off. We got there, and that was just obviously the dream thing about AMV was The Economist. And the scary thing about AMV was the amount of teams. They had possibly even better teams there than at BNP. So both cracking agencies. Yeah, AMV is just so many great opportunities. Stuff for The Economist and Volvo and Royal Academy Arts. Some TV for BBC News 24. But mainly, yeah, it was great to work on The Economist.
Yeah, I remember the campaigns you did for More Than Just Economics. Paul and I had that brief before you, and we didn't do anything particularly good on it at all. And then I think you and Dave came up with at least two award-winning campaigns, if not three, on the same brief. So I was just like, that was a great lesson for me. And there was some really good gold in there that we failed to mine. And this fantastic team of Dave and Sean just like knocked off, particularly the ones with the notes. I thought that was such a great answer.
That's very nice of you to say. Yeah, the notes campaign, that was really nice. Again, though, that's down to a simple brief. It's all down to that. We're not just about, The Economist is not just about money stuff. So it wasn't much of a leap to get to More Than Just Economics. And I think this campaign was to run in many different places around Europe, worldwide, maybe, or something like that. But I think that was the main reason we thought, we hit upon the idea of pictures of different currencies, and you just look at currencies and you think, hang on, there's loads of little visual clues in here. And yeah, that was just, it was hard to get there, but you know, once you've done it, you think, oh God, no, it's quite simple really, isn't it? And we did two or three campaigns for that. And we did the traditional Economist stuff, like the E equals IQ squared and what have you, you know, the more headline-y kind of Economist stuff. But We also did a Venn diagram campaign, which was very often with me and Dave. It was either he'd think of a rough area and then just press my left nipple and I'd start writing in that area and just churn out loads of stuff based on his original idea. And the Venn diagrams was like that, really.
That was great.
So we'd have like... the Venn diagram bit, the bit where it met in the middle, was something like Reed's The Economist. And on the left, it'd be like an economist-y or a money or a success kind of thought. And on the right, something just really weird like Ten's Sheep. And down at the bottom there, it'd say Voted Shepherd Most Likely To. It was just really... They were like doing cartoons, really. And that was really enjoyable. And... yeah, a lot of that language actually comes from, because I was trying to think about what things inspired me apart from, great American ads of the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And one of the things was also Larson cartoons. Yeah. You know, just the way they were written. And they're not completely dissimilar from ads, really. There's a thought and there's a picture and there's some words. And they're funny. So Yeah, no, I drifted off again, didn't I? I went into Larson Cartoon Land for some
reason. That's good. But now that you mention it, I think that one thing that distinguishes your writing from a lot of other people's is the element of humour. And do you think that's because it's something that's important to you, or something you feel like you are a funny person or whatever, and that always fed its way into your actual work, or is it just something that happened?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I started doing stand-up about 4 years ago, because very often, I mean, that Venn diagram one and the Sony stuff and certain other bits, they've got, like, humour in them. But generally, a lot of advertising is quite sober and serious. Mm. There's room for the occasional funny idea. But, God, I've just always been much more interested in funny stuff. And so you gather along the way, you gather loads of funny ideas that won't make it into an ad. You know, they can be too funny and childish and pranksterish somehow. And I had like a big catalogue of funny stuff, and I had this desperation, you know, to have them live somewhere. And I just started thinking about doing stand-up comedy. I mean, like low-level stuff, open mic night, but I got a five-minute set together of just funny stuff that couldn't really... they wouldn't work as ads. And I just started doing stand-up comedy to try and get these ideas made, because we have this need to see things actually live, and yeah. Stand-up comedy is just great for that, because you could write something that morning that you thought was really funny, and you didn't have to worry about client interference or account people saying, "Oh, is this tonally correct?" And you didn't have to worry about tone, or is this right for the target market, any of that nonsense. Just, is it funny? Is it clever? Yeah, then you memorise it, and later that night you've performed it, and it's lived. And it was just such a satisfying thing, and it's such a high that was, you know, when it goes well.
Yeah.
When you do a gig, and I got to this stage after about 70 gigs where I won this competition. It was very, obviously it's small in the great scheme of things, but just one of the things I'm proudest of, which is this poxy little Newbury Comedian of the Year thing,
yeah,
which I won about 4 years ago. And, oh, God, the satisfaction from doing that. You know, because it's just 100% pure.
Yeah.
It's everything that I'd written and acted out. And that's just the most amazing high I've had in my career. Actually, it's not part of my career, is it?
Well, but, it's, yeah, somehow.
Yeah, it's related. It's all words. It's all writing. And it's all... that's the thing that I was saying at the beginning about I like stuff in short bursts. It is very similar, because it's just like a few words with an idea in it, and it's designed to stand out and get a reaction. And yeah, that was just a really satisfying thing. There's no greater high than when it goes well, and obviously at the same time, there's no greater low than when it doesn't go well. You know, when you think you're being funny and the crowd's looking at you like you're oh, this is crap, mate. And yeah, they can't look you in the eye, and oh God, and your confidence goes, and then they feed off that, and they really can't look you in the eye, and then you're sweating like an idiot, and oh my God, it's depressing. But yeah, that was the risk you ran. It's either going to go brilliant or it's going to be just awful. And, I did one awful gig one night, and then I thought, oh, I can't be dealing with this anymore, and I just gave up. I quit. Back to advertising.
Well, what's funny about that, sorry to use the word funny in peculiar, I mean, I think I've actually said the sentence, Sean Doyle's the funniest guy in advertising, at least 20 times in my life when they're just having a chat with people. But I don't know if you remember doing this, but there was a point where you and Steve Paskin were freelancing at Grey at the same time that me and Daryl were. And we went round, I think all four of us went round, there was a road behind it to go and get something to eat for lunch. And it was raining, and I just remember you standing in the doorway of Greg's, pretending to be on your phone, going, hi, is that God? Hi, yeah. So I'm freelancing with Steve Paskin at Grey. I'm getting my lunch at Greg's, and it's pissing down with rain. what did I do to piss you off? And I just thought that was really, really funny, which it is really funny. But when I went to see you and Dave in AMV, I mean, I think Dave was more the CD-ish type in terms of evaluating your work and telling you to go and do some more stuff, or whatever. But generally, yeah, you were there being funny. So I really appreciated that. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Yeah, I remember that story. You remembered it almost word for word.
I do, because it was so funny.
That's brilliant.
But going back to AMV slightly, so Dave was doing the sort of CD-ish stuff, probably down to the sort of ambition bit you were talking about. But talking of ambition, the next stage was to go on and have your own agency, which to me is always intimidatingly complicated and annoying as a thought. So, you know, what made you go and do that? And also, how was teaming up with Walt to make that happen?
The opportunity came to start this place with these Italian, I can't even remember the name, that's incredible. But there's this Italian agency, and they wanted a presence in London, and they ended up asking me, Dave, and Walt. I think it was through a Walt contact that we got this. Yeah, they wanted to do a startup, and we thought, oh God, that sounds good. And having your name above the door, I mean, that's supposed to be where you, if you do well in advertising, I suppose that's the next step, is to start your own place.
Yeah.
And obviously you just couldn't say no to it. I mean, I was quite happy at AMV and I wasn't that ambitious, but it just made so much sense. And Dave really wanted to do it and Walt did. And I've never treated these things, you know, as seriously as I should have. So for me, it was just a case of, yeah, okay. And so we started this place, Campbell Doyle Dye. And then within about, God, I think it was just within a couple of months, it faltered. I can't remember why exactly. It might have been something silly, something to do with a memo that they'd sent us, which was too, I can't think of the word. But basically, they told us, do you want this? Do you know what? I'm trying to make stuff up now. I can't remember the bleeding thing. But something annoyed us.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think it really annoyed me, but I was pretending, you know, in a bid to seem professional.
Yes.
I was pretending that I was as bothered as everyone else was. We're going, what? They can't do that. This is outrageous. And I really wasn't that bothered. But we had to tell them within a couple of months that actually, no, we can't go ahead with this. Let's stop it before it really starts. And so we had to have this big final meeting with the Italian people. And so they came over for this meeting and it was really intense. There was about five or six of us in the room and three or four of them. And it was really awkward, obviously, because we had to sever all ties with them there and then. And to lighten things, we had this idea of, because they're Italian, we thought we'll pick five or six lines from Goodfellas and write them down, put them in a hat, and we'd each draw one of these lines out, and we would have to get that line into the meeting somehow. You know, whatever line you were given, you would have to get that line from Goodfellas in the meeting.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, that was very funny. It lightened a tense situation. And obviously, if the Italians found out about that, they'd bloody kill us. But then we had one of us had to say, ever since I was 6 years old, I wanted to be a gangster. Another one had an easy Henry bring back milk. And then Walt had the most difficult one. He drew the absolute killer out, which was, any more mail goes to this boy's house, in the fucking oven you go head first. And he did it. Well, he managed to do it without getting rumbled.
Wow. Fucking hell.
Oh, God. He said something like, he was referring to this memo that they sent us. So he was doing it in a roundabout way. But he said, pointing to this memo, he said, you know, any more mail goes to this boy's house, pointing at himself, I might as well put my fucking head in the oven head first. Something like that. So, cack-handedly.
Yeah.
He did it. And, yeah, that was funny. That was funny. And then, Peter Mead rescued us. And God, someone else can give you the details of this, but in my eyes, it's as simple as he sort of set us up as Campbell Doyle Dye with Mercedes.
Yeah.
So that was our first account as Campbell Doyle Dye without the Italians and what have you. So that was good. It was a great place, actually, for I can't even remember how many years. It's either 2 years, somewhere between 2 and 4 years. And we got great stuff out. Dave's Merrydown stuff.
Yeah.
Walter did the Lucky Star, mm-hmm. Mercedes trailer. Loads of other good stuff, like McAllen, Christian Aid. But as a business, it just didn't take off. And we were looking at CHI, who'd started round about, yeah, they started exactly the same time. And their work, I mean, they've done some good stuff over the years. Obviously, they've been going so long that they couldn't not have. But at the time, they weren't doing any really great stuff. And we were managing to keep nearly all of our work, you know, to a really good standard at least.
Yeah.
But they, as a business, were just rocketing. And we were sort of plodding along. Had a good creative reputation, but, you know, not really taking off as a business. And then you're getting into relationship stuff now, but basically none of us got on there. And all went a bit ropey in the end, and that lasted about, I don't know what it was. Like I say, something like 2 to 4 years. We all went our different ways, every one of us.
Right. So I didn't know if you were going to say any more stuff than that. But, I've spoken to Dave a few times
about... Well, we're getting into all personal stuff and relationship stuff, and, you know.
Of course. And, you know, when it comes around to me talking to Dave on the podcast about how that happened, you know...
He'll give you more, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Well, we'll see. But so what happened after that for you? Because it became shop and then then everyone seemed to leave and it all disappeared. And what happened to you then?
Yeah, and then I what I did was I started doing my own thing, which was called Panic, where I did lots of work for lots of different people. And the reason I called myself my company Panic was because I'd seen so many examples of people taking the piss in advertising, you know, like taking a month over a campaign that I knew you could do within a week and what have you. So
yeah,
my view was that why are you spending so much money on these people who are going to take that long to do this thing when you can do it in a week? Give it to me. I can do it much quicker and better and, quicker anyway. So that's why it was called Panic, and that's been sort of the bane of my life ever since, because now nearly everything I get is just a panic job. You know, rather than, could you spend a week doing this, please? I'd say, can you do this in a day, please? And I've just gotten so used now to doing stuff quickly. I have to cram a week into a day, basically.
Wow.
And so at the moment, I just juggle lots and lots of different bits of work, so for different agencies. So there's a lot of variety, but it's very hard work. Yeah, it hasn't always been like that. I've had I've had periods where I've worked for certain agencies for like a regular 3-day-a-week thing and a regular 2-day-a-week thing. Like MC Saatchi, I worked with Graham Fink, who I still work with now and again in Shanghai.
Yeah.
And I had this 2-day-a-week period about 3 years ago where I worked for the Assembly in
Shoreditch.
I don't know where it is. Yeah, somewhere. And I worked with Steve Dunn and Alex Taylor there and got this nice, I think, poster campaign away for Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Which was which did really well. So, but I must have worked in the past 5 or 6 years, TBWA aside, which was a 3-year period, I must have worked for about 100 different places doing just so much stuff. I just can't keep track of it.
And how does
begin to tell you.
But how does the work come to you? Is your name out there as a reliable emergency freelancer who, and therefore your name is kind of your reputation for that, and that's why people get there? Or how do you get that much contact with hundreds of different places?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, you have to do the your initial email first. I do have a bit of a reputation for being prolific.
Yeah.
You know, I do work really hard. I don't socialise much. I don't go out and enjoy myself much. I just tend to work every day. And, yeah, you just build up a reputation. You do an email to meet up with someone for a cup of tea, and then you say, do you let me have a little stab at this? No charge.
Right.
And then you just do a little bit of work for them, and hopefully they like it, and you've got some goodwill there because you did the first bit for free. And then you just get work from... work always seems to come up. You know, if ever there's like a day or two where it suddenly goes quiet, I know that the next day something will come in, and it just always has, really. I've never had more than about 3 days without work. There's been a lot of weekends involved because of the nature of this. It's not like a freelance gig where you're somewhere for 3 months and you're doing Monday to Friday.
Right.
This is like 2 days for these guys, half day for them, 4 days for the next one. So it's all, I have to juggle it all, and there's a lot of weekends and what have you. But that's the nature of working for very often two or three places a week, and then it'll be a different two or three places the next week. Very different from having a three-month stint at the one place. But that's all a part of being called panic, which is what I meant by it's the bane of my life. You know, it's just manic all the time. And I mean, that's the way the world is everywhere, I think, now, isn't it? You know, it's sadly, it's very much about quantity as much as it is quality.
Yeah, and speed.
I mean, at AMV in Lagos and what have you, you'd get to that one great campaign, and that's it. You've got to get that made. But now clients seem to expect to see three equally good campaigns in about a third of the time that you used to have. And I said before, I'm always one for, there's more than one way to do this, you know, but it's, you know, work isn't generally going to be as good. If you're doing three campaigns for the end of next week, it's not going to be as good as if you were concentrating on doing one good campaign for the end of next week. Of course not.
Sure.
I think people get really confused. You know, the fact that you've got lots of different media channels to fill these days.
Yeah.
People immediately start jumping to, right, well, here's an idea we could do in this one. Here's an idea we could do in that one. You know, you've got to take a day or two out and think, no, what is the overall idea? Get that, crack the big idea first. And then once you've got that and it's really good, then it's easier to start thinking, right, there's the governing idea. It's easier to fill all these other boxes then once you've got that big thought. But very often these days, I think people just jump straight into, well, here's a little idea you could do for this. That's clever. Here's, you know, and yeah, everything seems a bit too disparate.
But you also did do the a longer stint at TBWA when Peter first sort of took over. What was that like?
Yeah. Oh, that was great in the first couple of years. The first year we won BNY Mellon, big American bank. We won Lidl, we won Drinkware and stuff, and it was just a great year. And then the second year was even better work-wise, because I worked with Paul Belford and Walter Campbell there.
Yeah.
Really lucky to have worked with Belford and Campbell, Steve Paskin, Dave Dye. And, you know, I've worked with some really good people. So I was really fortunate there. I was working with them, and we got some really good stuff out for Lidl and Drinkware and Infinity cars and a couple of other things as well. And we thought, oh God, we're going to have a cracking year at D&AD the next year. You know, once we've entered all these. And then, because I thought it was, and they thought as well, you know, some of the best work we've done. And then nothing really happened in the awards. I was thinking, what? It was like the end of the world. It was like all the rules had changed, you know, because we knew what a good thought was.
Yeah.
We knew what a good idea was, knew what a good ad was. And these 20, 25 you know, really nice things to answer, and they hardly made a dent. And we thought, what the hell?
Weird.
Where do we go from here? Because these are all as good as the stuff we've previously done.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Maybe that's the changing nature of DNAD. But yeah, we're there for, there for 3 years, and Suter was great in a way, in the same way Tim was, in a way. Just he'd probably do more yeses than nos than Tim, but different people work in different ways. You know, his way was to just encourage. You know, look for the great idea lurking in there somewhere, and just be really positive with that. Whereas Tim's was more of a no kind of thing. Different horses for different courses, but
sure.
No, it was great there while it lasted. While it lasted.
While it lasted. Yeah. Are we kind of upset? Is Panic the present day now then? Sure. Is that what you're doing generally?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I'm still doing that. I'm doing stuff for lots of different people now. And I can't even remember. So many currently going on. You know, there's like a few projects every month now. And, you know, it's a nice flexible lifestyle in a way. I've gotten used to the panicky nature of it. But now it's nice because I just get a brief someone and I just go off to a grubby cafe somewhere. The grubbier the better.
Yeah.
Very often, I'm not joking, it's Heston Service Station on the M4.
That is grubby.
I'm often there at 6 a.m, it's freezing cold, just sitting there having a little think, and I'll get back in time to wave my daughter off to school, go off to another cafe, work there till 4 o'clock, see my daughter for another hour as she comes home from school, and then go off and work that night. It's nice that way. If you're into writing and nothing else, then no, it's fantastic in a way.
Great. Well, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say, because, you know, I guess because we're now at the end of your career, I won't be doing what I did with Dave, which is like do like more and more of these. So,
oh no, he's going to need about 10, isn't he?
I know, probably about, I reckon about 5 more once we go through everything.
He can bang on about one press ad for about an hour. So,
yeah, to be fair, I do lead him down that path a little bit, because I'm kind of a bit nerdy about some of the things he did, but he does have a huge, oh yeah, and there was this photographer and then this typographer and blah, which when it's copy, it's just, I wrote it. And, you know, there isn't like a huge collaboration thing about the writing. So,
And I don't remember many of these things that he's talking about either. I think they went on while he was in the room with someone and I was just standing outside trying to write.
Yeah, maybe. Well, thanks very much. Really appreciate you having a chat, particularly on New Year's Day. That's
no problem.
Very kind Pleasure. Of you. And I've got a small, enjoyable backlog of, I think I'm going to put Nigel up today. And then I spoke to Adam Tucker last week, and I had another chat with Paul Burke. So it might be a few weeks, but I'll pop Great. It up, and I hope you enjoy it.
Lovely. Thanks, Ben.
Great to speak to you, Sean.
Nice to speak to you.
You too. Cheers.
See you, mate.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.